It's time for the SwampSwamiSports.com audio podcast. And welcome to the SwampSwamiSports.com audio podcast. Today, we're going to give a grade to the USFL week number one. Stay tuned. If you happened to watch Saturday night's initial USFL football game, which was televised by both Fox and NBC, you saw a large crowd in Birmingham, Alabama, cheering on their hometown Stallions to a 28-24 victory over the New Jersey Generals. And after the game, the Birmingham crowd was treated to a fireworks show. A tight game, an exciting finish, and a post-game fireworks show? Wow, what a great start for national television. But then, the United States Football League played their other three football games on tap for last weekend's openings. The optics were less than stellar. Though the teams and their new uniforms looked kind of spiffy, there was a glaring absence of something else at these other three games. A crowd. Now, the 2022 USFL is running a very tight financial ship. The league, which is entirely owned by Fox Sports, by the way, decided to play all of their regular season contest in Birmingham, Alabama. That's right, every single regular season game will be played right there. Your faithful Swamp Swami wrote about this over a month ago. Go check out the story at SwampSwamiSports.com. Though the new USFL was breaking in a brand new $200 million football stadium in downtown Birmingham, Alabama, which will become the home for the UAB Blazers this fall, Alabama's largest city and the state's fanatical football fans are being counted on to support the other USFL 7 teams not named Birmingham. Though 35,000 people attended the Birmingham Stallions home opener played Saturday night, there were maybe, just maybe, 200 fans in the stands for each of the other three USFL games, which were played on Easter Sunday and on Monday in Alabama's Steel City. With a 45,000-seat football stadium, it was fairly easy to count the crowd, too. One by one by one. Without any fan excitement in the house, those other three USFL games look like a glorified scrimmage game being played for television. I watched a portion of each of the four USFL games played in Birmingham this weekend, and the quality of play is very much like that of other recent attempts at spring professional football. It's probably the equivalent in baseball of seeing a double-A baseball team compared to the major league. The players are still very good, but most of them are not in the big leagues for a good reason. Now, lest we forget, the Alliance of American Football, the AAF, rest in peace 2019, after just 8 weeks, and the XFL's version 2, rest in peace 2020, after just 5 weeks of play, are recent reminders that creative entrepreneurial minds continue to believe that there is some type of proverbial pot of gold at the end of the spring football rainbow. Though the quality of the football played on the field was at times very interesting and sometimes entertaining, the buying public, whether at home watching on television or paying football customers at the stadium, quickly lost their interest after a first week or two of spring football in prior years. In last weekend's newest spring football effort, the USFL scored acceptable TV ratings for their opening weekend of play. In addition to the Saturday night primetime game on Fox and NBC, which grabbed 3 million television viewers, the other three football games played on Easter Sunday and on Monday night were watched by about half of that Saturday night audience. So Fox Sports previously indicated that they are hoping to average 1.4 million viewers per game for the new USFL this season. And based on week number one, they succeeded. Barely. However, with 9 more weekends of games to be played in the regular season, the probability is rather high that weekly television ratings may start to slide. And that's why every other spring football league during my lifetime, and there have been plenty, have failed. Let's take a closer look now at the USFL's first weekend of play and make some observations. First, on the television itself. The network production of the four USFL games came across pretty well. The brand new stadium in Birmingham is right-sized for this product and appears to have the technical capability of producing a very quality television program. The announcer crews were generally competent and not a distraction from the ballgame. And I like the use of the microphones to be able to hear what the coach and the quarterbacks were doing on the field of play. It's amazing to see how quickly a new play is being called on the sidelines and then relayed to the entire team. There's no time to waste either, as the USFL's 35-second play clock starts immediately after the other play has ended. Now, visually, I'm not as sold on the overutilization of drone cameras hovering all around the field. Though a few of the camera angles were interesting, for example, an interception was returned for a touchdown, that one was shown on the drone, and it was kind of fun. Most of the drone camera shots, though, felt kind of dizzying. That drone camera gimmick wears off really quickly. These technical issues should be improving, though, as the season goes along, so let's give a week one grade, at least for the TV, of a B.
Excellent.
Now let's take a look at the team nicknames and the uniforms we saw. Several teams of the original USFL circa 1984 are back once again 38 years later, and they are keeping these same 1984 team nicknames too. In the USFL North, we have the Michigan Panthers, the New Jersey Generals, the Philadelphia Stars, and the Pittsburgh Maulers. In the USFL's South Division, we have the Birmingham Stallions, the Houston Gamblers, the New Orleans Breakers, and the Tampa Bay Bandits. Now, my lovely wife asked me, so why is the Houston team called the Gamblers when there isn't a casino around Houston within 150 miles of the city? Yeah, she asked good questions, doesn't she? Well, I think it's likely because the 1984 USFL Houston Gamblers adopted that nickname based on the Kenny Rogers country music song from the late 1970s, which also continued to stay in the headlines as a weekly television show playing into the early 1980s. As attendance in Houston dwindled during the USFL's second year, the Houston Gamblers lost a lot of money, and they were merged with the surviving New Jersey Generals. You know, you just gotta know when to hold 'em and know when to fold 'em. And as for the new USFL uniforms, they are generally quite colorful and stylish. Other than Pittsburgh's two-toned blue and orange color combination, the USFL uniforms looked very professional. So for the nicknames and the color schemes for the first week, we'll give them a grade of B. Woo! On the field, the one thing that really jumps out at you is the lack of quarterback talent in the new USFL. Though several of the players do have some experience from the Canadian Football League, and several have been clipboard holders or third stringers on a few NFL teams, only one USFL quarterback even passed for more than 200 yards in week number one. And that was Byron Scott of the Philadelphia Stars, who played for Occidental College. He passed for a whopping 202 yards on 36 attempts last weekend. Now, Shea Patterson of the Michigan Panthers, via the University of Michigan and Ole Miss, you might remember, he totaled 192 yards on 17 out of 25 passing attempts for the second highest passing total of the week. So the USFL is not a pass-happy league, at least yet. The hometown Birmingham Stallions, led by former Louisiana Tech head coach Skip Holtz, inserted his former college starting quarterback for the Bulldogs into the second half of the game. Jamar Smith passed for 156 yards coming in relief and scored the game's final touchdown on a quarterback rollout. The knowledge between the coach and quarterback really paid off last weekend in Birmingham. The defenses for each USFL team seem to be far ahead of the offenses, which is expected given that there's been less than 1 month of practice thus far. The USFL's week number one scoring was surprisingly low, though. The eight teams of the league average a little bit over 17 points each. The scoring should improve weekly, at least we hope so. And even the place kicking was shoddy in week number one, with just 5 out of 12 field goals converted during those four games. Overall, the on-field play was okay, but not very special. I give it a week one grade of C-. In summary, the new USFL debut last weekend played well for television but was a bust in the stands. I don't know if the league actually expected hometown fans from places like Houston, New Orleans, and Pittsburgh to fly or drive all the way to northern Alabama to watch these games. If so, that was a huge failure in week number one. The USFL ticket prices in Birmingham are really cheap, though. Just $10 gets you and up to 3 young children into any USFL football game. the lack of fan interest other than for the hometown Stallions shouldn't be surprising. This error falls squarely on the Fox Sports executives. The cost of production are cheap, but so was the look on TV. And as we covered in the previous post about the USFL, all of this was being done to minimize travel costs, which are huge, stadium costs too, and management overhead across the entire league. And as the spring weather gets a little hotter each weekend in Alabama, don't expect the local attendance to improve. Then again, this football league is geared for television, so maybe Fox Sports really doesn't care how many people show up at the games. Perhaps the USFL should now invest in some artificial crowd noise technology to give the players and viewers at home the feeling that at least the games are being played in front of a stadium full of excited fans. So let's give the USFL overall week number one grade a C. The USFL's week number one was not a bust, but it was far from a huge success. The excitement factor was missing from three of the four ball games, which were played in a nearly empty stadium in Birmingham. The true test is going to start coming this weekend. If there isn't a noticeable slippage in the television ratings, though, the USFL 2022 version does have a chance to succeed. As for me, I just wouldn't bet on it just yet. I'm Swamp Swami. Come back and see us.